From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
El Cerrito.
O-Town, baby.
Lake Merritt.
Temescal. Tenderloin.
Treasure Island. Richmond, California.
Coming up, are San Francisco's transportation policies pushing drivers off the road?
In the last 5 years, the city has removed 4,000 parking spots.
Then we'll hear about a new live show from the producers of one of our favorite podcasts, Radio Ambulante.
I do think in some ways the future of journalism is live because it's harder and harder to get people to pay for anything.
And we hear how one man transformed himself into his own arch enemy in the name of protest.
Who's the cartoon here? You know, is it me or is it these guys? You know, I mean, I'm just pretending. You know, these guys are actually arguing against their own community.
That's all coming up on Cross Currents. Stay with us. San Francisco paints itself as a green, alternative, transportation-friendly city, a city of walkers and cyclists. But there are some who say the city has taken its pro-pedestrian stance too far. A group called the Restore Transportation Balance Coalition says it wants to take the roads back. That's the goal of Proposition L, a declaration of policy to make the city's parking meters, garages, and traffic laws more car-friendly. But at what cost to other modes of transit? KALW's Liz Pfeffer has more.
Have you been to the Castro lately? The neighborhood's main drag just debuted a glam, pedestrian-friendly makeover. I'm talking about Castro Street, of course, now featuring palm trees, rainbow crosswalks, and wide sidewalks. But there were some trade-offs for this fresh new look. On-street parking was monopolized by months of construction, and now the much narrower street makes it harder for muni and delivery trucks to get through. The upside? More walking space for pedestrians, which might even boost commerce by encouraging foot traffic into businesses. But for a while, it was a little bit of a problem.
We lost a lot of our morning customers because they shut down the street. Would come in, park real quick, grab a cup of coffee, and head out.
Dahlia Corey works at Castro Coffee Company, which her parents have owned for decades. She says things are better now, even with just a few less parking spots on the street.
When I asked when they first started, I said, how many spots? They said, we're losing 6 spots total, like on the whole street.
In the last 5 years, the city has removed 4,000 parking spots. Over 300 of those parking spots were formerly reserved for disabled people, and they have not been replaced.
That's Jason Clark. He co-authored Proposition L. We're meeting near the San Francisco DMV. He says the recent trend in city planning puts San Francisco motorists at the back of the bus.
When the first meter was installed about 65 years ago, it was always free on Sunday. It was always free on holidays. I mean, it's a holiday. Everyone deserves a little bit of a break.
This return to simpler, cheaper times is a point of consensus for more than 17,000 San Franciscans who signed the Prop L petition. The Restore Transportation Balance Coalition, the group that is pushing the measure, gathered the bulk of those signatures right here at the DMV, between two arterial roads. The traffic buzzing by is so loud tonight that Clark and I have to move the interview into my car. He came by Muni. Although Prop L was his idea, he doesn't own a car. Clark is a member of the Log Cabin Republicans of San Francisco. The initiative has not received any City Hall endorsements, but has gained support from notable groups like the Harvey Milk Democratic Club and firefighter and police officer unions. It's also got some techie billionaire clout. Napster co-founder Sean Parker is the campaign's biggest contributor. This is what's being proposed. No charging meter fees on Sundays and holidays or outside 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. No installing new meters without neighborhood consent. No increasing parking garage meter or ticket fees for at least 5 years. Also, mandatory representation of motorists on the SFMTA board. Goals to achieve safer, smoother flowing streets. And finally, equal enforcement of traffic laws. I asked Clark what exactly that last one means.
Well, for example, when there's a stop sign, it's required by law that everyone stop at the stop sign. The same thing should occur for someone who decides to jaywalk across a busy street. Certain segments of the transportation community here are not being held to the same standards as motorists. And in order to have a balanced approach, you need to treat everyone equally.
But is it really fair to treat pedestrians and motorists the same? Dan Chapman is an associate professor of city and regional planning at UC Berkeley. His research focuses on land use and transportation planning in San Francisco. And he says motorists and pedestrians aren't equal. For one thing, the city doesn't have a problem with pedestrians killing drivers.
In general, I think we need to acknowledge that the driver of a car, the car itself, is not equal to a pedestrian. Motorized modes are the reason why we need traffic lights in the first place.
Chapman says that smoother flowing streets don't mean safer streets. If you do things to increase the flow of traffic, it will likely decrease pedestrian and cyclist safety. As for the cost of parking, he found that in many areas, parking is already underpriced.
From an equity perspective, I disagree wholeheartedly with the idea that you should make Sunday parking free.
That's because Saturday and Sunday are the biggest travel days in the Bay Area. So they generate the most meter revenue, which should be put toward improving the overall transportation system. And Chapman says the idea that less road space equals more traffic only makes sense on the surface.
They have a good argument that, well, if you take away road space, why wouldn't you expect there to be more gridlock, more congestion? But as you take away road space, you also probably shift people over from vehicles to other modes. And the reason for that is that as it becomes more difficult to drive, other modes become more attractive.
And that's part of the point of city policy, to get people out of their cars. Going carless should be encouraged, according to Amandeep Jala. He's the president of the San Francisco League of Conservation Voters. I met him at his home on Valencia Street, where he's the proud owner of the city's only private parklet. That's a public space that's been converted into a mini park. In Jawa's case, he's transformed his driveway into a green space.
Prop L basically begins the process of shifting our city's transportation policy away from lots of different modes of transportation and towards just one mode, driving.
He's worried about the environmental impacts of a more car-friendly city. Around 30% of San Francisco's greenhouse gas emissions come from private automobiles.
I don't want to demonize people have to drive. There's various things people have to do to make things work. That's not what this is about. This is about how do we keep all of our transportation options balanced in ways that work for people, for the environment, and for just getting our jobs done every day.
Back at the DMV, Prop L proponent Jason Clark says what the city is doing isn't working.
If you live in San Francisco, ask yourself, has traffic gotten worse? Has the on-time rate for Muni increased? Do I feel safer navigating the streets of San Francisco? The answers, almost universally, to those questions are no. So we need to change things.
And that's something both sides can agree on. San Francisco hasn't found an effective solution to the increasing number of cars and people on the streets. So it's fitting that the solution itself is at a bottleneck. In San Francisco, I'm Liz Pfeffer for Cross Currents.
So what do you think about Prop L? Do you think cyclists and drivers should abide by similar rules? We want to hear from you, so call us at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and you may hear your response on the air. We did get some feedback on yesterday's conversation about Prop G in San Francisco. If passed, Prop G would impose a 14% to 24% tax on the sale or transfer of multi-unit properties that have been owned for less than 5 years. We did not make it clear that the additional tax would not apply to single-family homes or condominiums, and it would not apply if the owner has used their property as a primary residence for a year before selling. We hope that's clear now. You can find more information about Prop G along with the rest of our election coverage at kalw.org. Click on Elections 2014. Thank you. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Daniel Alarcón is a novelist who lives in San Francisco, but there's more to him than that. His identity reaches across many borders, and his storytelling traverses multiple media. His latest book, At Night We Walk in Circles, was a finalist for this year's Penn Faulkner Award. His feature story, The Contestant, was part of the first edition of the California Sunday magazine. And you may have heard his show, Radio Ambulante, a Spanish-language podcast that airs Thursday nights here on KALW, and it's often compared with This American Life. This Sunday, Alarcón is expanding his broad horizons even further, hosting a live Radio Ambulante event in San Francisco at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. The show is called Outsiders and will feature multimedia storytelling from Cuba, Chile, Mexico, and the United States. Daniel Alarcón sat down with KALW's Ben Trefney to talk about his varied career and his identity as a citizen of the world.
You yourself were born in Lima. Mm-hmm. Right, and moved to Birmingham when you were really young, when you were three, and were raised there?
Yeah, I was raised in the U.S. in Alabama.
And then you went and got a degree in anthropology from Columbia, and you got a master's in Iowa at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. And so this is all quite a traveling background. I'm wondering how that's shaped the way in which you see the world.
Well, it's hard to, you know, to do that kind of self-analysis. I mean, I think studying anthropology and you know, was helpful, for example. I think it gave me certain tools and certain vocabulary to talk about things. I think having been born in Peru, I think I have a unique relationship to Lima, a unique relationship to that country, because I'm from there, but I'm not. You know, so every time I go back to Lima, I view the city as someone who's you know, in love with that place, who is both from there and completely foreign. You know, so everything that happens in Lima, I see with the fresh eyes of a newcomer, and that I think is an advantage. One thing that I've noticed, I think, working in Radio Ambulante on this project for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, is that I feel less Peruvian and more Latin American. And that sounds like an odd thing to say, but it's because I've just been exposed to so many more stories from so many, you know, different places and gone deep into them, because I basically work as an editor and producer for stories that are coming from all corners of the region. And it's fascinating. It's been one of the things I most have enjoyed about this process.
You co-founded it back in 2011. So how have you seen it evolve from your original vision to where it stands right now?
I think the vision was very clear. And it was, we heard when we started that Mexicans only want to hear stories about Mexico, and Puerto Ricans only want to hear about Puerto Rico, and Chileans about Chile, and da-da-da-da. And I just felt intuitively that wasn't true. And one of the things that has been really exciting about watching it grow and watching, you know, the audience find us has been how that's been ratified. My intuition has completely ratified. And that's extraordinary to me. That means that if you tell a good story, if you have, you know, integrity in the reporting and in the narration, and you do a good job with the production, that you can reach people and they don't have to have a real personal connection to the story. They just need to be compelled from the first moment. We're in the midst of producing for this live event, which is going to be a bunch of stories around a theme. The theme is outsiders. The show will be bilingual and totally accessible for monolingual folks. So we've been working on a bunch of stories about outsiders, and one of them we're going to hear now, I think. It's a story out of L.A. produced by Ana Yancy Diaz-Cortez, who works at KCRW and is a fantastic producer. And she kind of weaves in her own story as she tells the story of an immigrant community north of L.A. in a place called Las Casitas.
Let's hear a little clip from that.
Hoy me encuentro muy lejos de la tierra que me vio nacer, de mis padres y de mis
hermanos. The smell of caldo de gallina, Univision on the television, rancheras blaring from the speakers, and people coming in and out of unlocked doors just to say hi. It feels like a village. The residents of Las Casitas come from Honduras, El Salvador, Mexico, Guatemala, and never mind what you see from the outside. In here, things are tight. The residents live crammed in really small spaces. Sometimes the kitchen pantry is used as a closet for 5 people.
Buenas tardes. Les doy la bienvenida por venir a mi casa.
Navi Ortiz has lived in Las Casitas for almost 20 years. She shows me around.
Pues yo les puedo hablar de aquí, de adentro de mi departamento. estando sillones.
The closets are jammed shut. The other bedroom houses a family of three. And the single bathroom is, well, communal.
Guatemala es mi origen. Yo vengo de una familia muy pobre.
When she came to the U.S., Navia struggled. She worked hard, making only $15 a week as a housekeeper in the area. And I know you think you've heard Navia's story before, but damn, it's impressive every time. She didn't see her kids in over a decade. Think of the scale of that sacrifice. And almost everyone I met in Las Casitas had a story just as epic, just as brave.
That's from the story of Las Casitas, or the Tiny Houses, by Ana Yancy Diaz-Cortez. That's going to be part of the live Radio Ambulante event, Outsiders, taking place on Sunday, November 2nd at 5 p.m. at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. We're talking with Daniel Alarcón. He is the co-founder of Radio Ambulante. What is it that you really like about this story?
You know, I've been wanting to work with Ana Yancy for a long time because I really respect her work. And what I like about the story is that she got really deep. She got really good access to this place and took us somewhere where not all our listeners are going to have been, you know. The theme of the show is outsiders, and I think what this particular piece calls into question is how you define who's in and who's out. In this particular case, the issue is who's American and who isn't. You know, this girl, the protagonist, one of the protagonists we meet is named America, and she says it like that, America, you know, America. And she, you know, she wouldn't blink for a second about saying that she's American. And I think that there are people, of course, you know, certain ideologies who would look at her and look at where she lives and look at where she comes from and question her Americanness. And, you know, she could probably shut them up with a glance, you know, but I think it's an important question to ask.
What is it that you like about working in audio?
I mean, you know, as a novelist, audio is very close to literature. It's very close to that magic that happens when you're reading a novel and you feel like the author's whispering in your ear. It has that same level of intimacy and that same level of just connection, you know, human connection, where you can almost imagine yourself there. You can almost imagine being someone else. You know, I think it's magical. You know, I think it's what is the closest that I've found to the magic of literature.
Well, this is a hot time for live storytelling. I mean, The Moth, which is another feature on KALW quite frequently, as well as Snap Judgment. I mean, yeah. They've had a couple shows within the last month and a half or so at the Norse Theater in San Francisco.
Yeah, they're killing it.
Yeah, it seems like there's a real resurgence of live radio theater in a way. I mean, it's almost like a throwback, it seems.
It is, and you know, I think, honestly, and this is kind of off. It's not, I don't know if it's off topic, but I do think in some ways the future of journalism is live, because it's harder and harder to get people to pay for anything. And live events are the last bastion of paid programming. You know, like when you can go and actually have a face-to-face interaction with a journalist, a storyteller, a radio producer, a DJ all in one night, that's something that people are willing to shell out, you know, a few bucks for. The rest of the, you know, journalism and narrative arts scene is, you know, basically the massive exchange of links, and people don't feel like they have to pay for that. I'm interested in the future of journalism because I run a journalism project, because I love doing journalism, because I believe in sort of the ethics and the purpose of journalism. And I'm super excited by projects like California Sunday, Pop-Up Magazine, which is it's kind of a originator, Radio Ambulante, Snap Judgment, you know. I think all of that is tremendous, and it's exciting as someone who both consumes and produces journalism and narrative arts. You know, we've got to find a way to pay for this. Live events is one way.
That's Radio Ambulante co-founder Daniel Alarcón speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. This Sunday at 5 o'clock, you can experience Radio Ambulante Outsiders, a live performance of stories at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. The show will be equally accessible for Spanish and English speakers. Find the details at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba.
Now that we've heard all about Radio Ambulante, let's hear a story from the show. This one originally aired in 2012, and to introduce it, let's go ahead and bring back the show's host, Danielle Alarcón.
If you've ever heard an American politician weigh in on the immigration debate by saying something like this,
self-deportation.
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 The answer is self-deportation.
It's thanks to this guy.
Illegals are bad. Illegals are bad. Illegals are bad. I would deport my own mom and dad, you know.
That's Daniel Deportado, or actually Lalo Alcaraz, the renowned Chicano cartoonist. In the early 1990s, Lalo came up with this character, an ultra-conservative Hispanic Republican with tacky taste in clothing and a controversial immigration agenda. Our producer Nancy Lopez has the story behind this character, this name, and the media hoax that landed Daniel Deportado on national television, inadvertently putting self-deportation on today's Republican agenda.
People say that all political trends in the U.S. can be traced back to California. When it comes to immigration, that's definitely true. Let's go back to 1994. The governor was Pete Wilson. He was ultra-right-wing, and he was pushing a law called Proposition 187. It was the first anti-immigrant legislation to be passed by any state government. Prop 187 was crafted to deny health care and public education to undocumented immigrants living in California, all 2 million of them. It was super controversial, and Lalo Alcaraz remembers it very clearly.
Sometimes when I speak at crowds today, we're talking about Arizona and SB 1070, and I tell them, you know, back in 1994, we had the granddaddy of these laws, which was Prop 187, and it was just as crazy as it is now.
At the time, Lalo was making politically charged cartoons that appeared in the LA Weekly. He also wrote fake news stories that showed up in Pocho Magazine, a satirical zine he founded with some friends. And of course, Prop 187 struck a nerve.
I remember the day in the summer I was driving my friend Esteban Zul to the airport because he lived in the Bay Area. I could feel in the pit of my stomach, we were talking about Prop 187 and how awful it was and all the hate that it generated and legitimized to some people. And
he thought, it's as if the writers of the proposition wanted to make California so unwelcoming for immigrants that they would leave the U.S. on their own. Lalo and his friend Esteban decided to roll with this idea. First, they came up with a fake group called Hispanics for Wilson. The group was so militant, its members were willing to deport themselves.
And that's where self-deportation, the concept, was born.
That's also how the fake leader of this organization was born.
We had to come up with a name for the leader of this group. And I don't know how it came to me, but this guy had to be so staunchly anti himself, you know, is self-hating right-wing Republican, you know, like Herman Cain or something like that, that his very name had to state the obvious that he was deported, Daniel Deportado.
They wrote a fake press release calling for the most outrageous things they could think of. The creation of self-deportation centers so that all Hispanics return to their country of origin. They denounced Mexican food as biological weapons.
You know, we had the 10K border fun run into Mexico where we'd give you a free pair of tennis shoes, but as long as you don't come back.
The press release went on to pledge that the group, Hispanics for Wilson, would retrain white-collar workers in agricultural, restaurant, and hotel maintenance arts once all illegal immigrants were successfully removed from the country. They listed Dr. Daniel Deportado, or Daniel Deportado, as a contact person. And they sent this fake press release out to real news agencies all across the state. It was dated September 16, 1994, coincidentally or not, the anniversary of Mexico's Independence Day. Now imagine you're a news editor at a big television network reading this press release. It would seem obvious that it was some kind of prank, right? But to the surprise of Lalo and his friends, it wasn't. Some people actually took the bait.
to get a hook, line, and sinker, especially Telemundo.
Telemundo is the second largest Spanish language television network in the country, and they invited Daniel Deportado onto their nationally syndicated news program, The Pedro Sefcik Show.
I said, oh my God, what are we going to do? And Esteban goes, we're going to go. What do you mean? We're going to go. I go, oh, shoot. I guess I'm Daniel Deportado.
This would be Daniel Deportado's very first appearance, and it would be on national television. So Lalo gelled his hair to the side, sported dark pilot glasses, and wore a business suit one size too big with a white tie.
You know, like kind of like 70s douchebag. You know, he doesn't have good clothes because he's not even a good sellout. You know, he doesn't even have an Armani suit. He's just like a cheap, self-hating, anti-immigrant Mexican that they got for cheap.
Daniel Deportado arrived at the network studios in Glendale, California, with an entourage, his fake assistant, and his fake bodyguard.
We were in the audience with a bunch of high school students and their parents. The high school students had gotten kicked out of school for protesting 187, right? So they were worked up and pissed off at us.
And if Daniel Deportado's mere presence wasn't enough to anger this crowd of immigrants, the things he said got people to jump out of their seats.
We support Pete Wilson so much, all Republican immigration policies so much, we vowed to deport ourselves back to Mexico. And then we would also would deport the Chinese back to Mexico. You know, and the crowd went crazy. The crazier things we said, the crazier they got, you know. It was hilarious because they wanted to lynch us right on the spot.
The studio in Glendale was linked up via satellite to the network's headquarters in Miami, Florida, where the show was being taped. On the panel there were pro-immigrant activists from Los Angeles.
A couple of them that knew us. And so they were kind of looking through the monitors going like, wait a minute, this is weird. You could tell they were kind of smirking, going like, what the heck?
On the panel were also three Cuban attorneys who, like Daniel Deportado, were in full support of Prop 187.
It's like, who's the cartoon here? You know, is it me or is it these guys? You know, I mean, I'm just pretending, you know, these guys are actually arguing against their own communities, you know. And then
the three fat Cubans.
The three fat Cubans. A little homeboy was sitting next to us, this little kid, like 15-year-old kid, goes up to me and goes, hey, you're a f***ing sellout, hey.
And you said?
I said, oh, whatever, cholo, you know, I don't know what I said.
There stood Lalo Alcaraz as Daniel Deportado, with his crazy getup and his entourage making absurd statements against Latino immigrants to a room packed with Latino immigrants. And no one in the audience in Glendale or on the panel in Miami called his bluff. And somehow he didn't break character, not for the whole hour.
One of the segment producers came over and goes, you know, I'm going to have to walk you guys out because the crowd's getting a little worked up here. They don't like you. And I go, está bien, joven, vamos, you know, whatever. My obnoxious voice. We hit the door. We ran to the car and we're laughing the whole way. That's when we like, whoa, we can't believe we just got away with it.
We couldn't find a recording of the show, but we know it was broadcast nationally and across 22 Latin American countries. It aired the Friday before the November election, when California voters would pass Prop 187 by a wide margin, 59%. But the immigration debate continued, and Daniel Deportado's call for self-deportation was heard almost too loud and clear. In a New York Times article, California Governor Pete Wilson said, quote, if it's clear to you that you cannot be employed and that you and your family are ineligible for services, you will self-deport, end quote. The piece was dated November 21, 1994, just weeks after Daniel Deportado hit the limelight. Over the next 2 years, Lalo Alcaraz would keep up his shenanigans while the U.S. Supreme Court debated the constitutionality of Prop 187. In 1996, he went to a Chicano protest in San Diego, California, as Daniel Deportado, he handed out leaflets promoting his latest project, a 2,000-mile-long condo complex on the U.S.-Mexico border called the Border Wall Estates. It was another hoax, of course.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Not so much for one Chicano activist in the crowd who threatened Daniel Deportado with a knife.
And he's telling me, I'll cut your tie off. I had an American flag tie. You want me to cut that tie off for you? I go, no, thank you. Strut off. I didn't even stop to say, it's a joke, dude, not because he was not having it.
Prop 187 was ultimately struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court. The judges ruled that California, as a state, could not make its own immigration laws. This was a job for the federal government. But fast forward to 2012. Most states have debated anti-immigrant bills reminiscent of Prop 187. And some, like Arizona, Alabama, and Georgia, have actually passed them. And the concept of self-deportation has reemerged. Now it's the official platform of the Republican Party. And no, they're not joking.
The concept of self-deportation in immigration is that if people are breaking the law, we as a nation or an individual state should take steps to ratchet up the level of law enforcement incrementally so that people start thinking, well, you know what, maybe I should follow the law.
That's Chris Kobach in an interview with Univision. He's a Kansas Secretary of State who helped write both Arizona and Alabama's anti-immigrant bills. He is also the man responsible for advising Mitt Romney on self-deportation.
I can never imagine it would have come, turned into policy or become a national thing like it did. It's really, you know, just outrageous.
These real-life ironies are what can make Lalo's job as a cartoonist and humorist so easy. But as a husband and father of two, he can't help but feel deeply troubled by policymakers who are so explicit in their animosity toward undocumented immigrants. In the end, for Lalo, this whole media hoax was his personal way of dealing with that.
I mean, I was really tired of feeling sick to my stomach. So it was just, you know, how I cope with life and make fun of it. And, you know, fortunately, you know, people like when I do that, you know.
When you cope with life.
You and I cope with life, yeah, and put it out for people to see. I mean, maybe it made it bearable for people.
So now that Mitt Romney has replaced Pete Wilson, now that SB 1070 in Arizona and HB 56 in Alabama have replaced Prop 187, now that self-deportation is being proposed as a real solution to the country's broken immigration system, Daniel Deportado is back. And it's not a joke.
That's reporter Nancy Lopez with a story that originally aired in 2012 for Radio Ambulante, a show that tells Latin American stories from everywhere Spanish is spoken. You can hear Radio Ambulante every Thursday night at 11:30 here on KALW, and they've got a live event taking place Sunday at 5 p.m. at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Find the details at KALW.org. That's it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Audrey Dilling, Sandhya Dirks, Rachel Dornhelm, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Hannah Kingsley-Ma, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Christina Loring, Lena Mesitzis, Ted Muldoon, Stephen Short, Todd Whitney, and Melanie Young. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Leela Day. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And you are a big part of our show, and we love hearing from you. So email us at news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5 when we'll pay a visit to one of the Bay's lesser-known baseball teams, the San Quentin All-Stars.
I feel like a kid in the candy store right now. You know, I get a chance to just really just play the game I love, man, and give it all and leave it on the field.
Get ready to play ball tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. This is the Extra Action Marching Band. They'll be celebrating Halloween this Friday night at the New Parish in Oakland. Show starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.